My name is Rabbi Joel Alter. I'm Director of Admissions for the Rabbinical School and the H.L. Miller Cantorial School and College of Jewish Music at JTS. I've prepared a commentary on this week's parasha, Parashat Nasot. Sharp elbows at shul extend beyond the Kiddush table line and back into the sanctuary. Prayer, or giving honor to God, can be a competitive business. There are lots of reasons why this is so, and some of them even have to do with loving God. But showing off how we love God can get us into trouble. Against this background, let's consider Numbers chapter 7, the concluding chapter of Parashat Nasot. At 89 verses, chapter 7 is a wall of words built mostly from 12 near-identical blocks. Each block records the same gift brought by each of the 12 Nisi'im, chieftains of the 12 tribes of Israel, on 12 successive days to join in dedicating the Mishkan, the tabernacle, upon the inauguration of its service. On the first day, Nachshon ben Aminadav, the Nasi, or chieftain of the tribe of Judah, brings a bowl, a basin, and a ladle, and a specific array of 21 animals for the Levites' sheepfold and pens. On the second day, Netanel ben Suar, Nasi of the tribe of Yisachar, brings the same, as does Eliav ben Chelon of Zvulun on the third day. While my increasingly terse telling about each day's gift is efficient and still clear, the Torah chooses to recount each gift with elaborate, repetitive precision. The dignified procession of Nisi'im, each stepping forward in turn to present their dedicatory offerings on their appointed days, seems the very model of serene, non-competitive equality. Robert Alter, no relation, writes, "This passage is a kind of epic inventory. Each of the tribes, here accorded absolutely equal status before the sanctuary without political hierarchy, brings exactly the same offering." One can readily imagine the members of each tribe in the ancient audience of this text would be expected to relish the sumptuousness of its own tribal offering, exactly equal to all the others, as it hears the passage read. No sharp elbows here. Why else would the Torah tell of it thus, rather than in shorthand? The Torah does not quite answer this question, but it gives us clues. The rabbis characteristically leap upon them. First, while the Nisi'im assemble their gifts on their own initiative, it is God who instructs Moshe to have them offered on 12 successive days. If God wants the presentation so evenly arranged, then the Torah rightly records it in discrete portions. But there are other hints. Of the 12 Nisi'im involved, Nachshon, the giver on the first day, is the only one not recognized as a Nasi in our passage. We know he is a Nasi from last week's Parashat Bamidbar, yet here he is named without his title. The commentator Chizkiah ben Manoach, known as the Chizkuni, points out, Nachshon is not called Nasi here, so that his being first to offer the sacred gift would not go to his head, while all the others are called Nisi'im because they humbled themselves in offering their gifts after his. Chizkuni recognizes that the Nisi'im are dignified men, deserving of, and possibly accustomed to honor, and that the opportunity to publicly honor God might play on their pride. So the Torah manages the chieftain's honor with careful application of their honorifics. When Netanel ben Suar's gift on the second day is the same as Nachshon's on the first, the rabbis pick up on a variation in the telling. Everett Fox's distinct translation best conveys the redundancy in the Hebrew. On the second day, Netanel, son of Tsuar, leader, Nasi, of Yisachar, brought it near, he brought near his near offering. Fox is indicating that the Torah employs the verb hikriv, offered or brought near, twice with Netanel, when for all of the other Nisi'im, it uses it but once. Remember, this passage is all about what Alter calls verbatim repetition. Midrash Rabbah in 13:15 asks, Why is hikriv used in connection with Netanel? Because Reuven lodged a complaint when he saw that the tribe of Yisachar was about to make the second offering and not him. It's enough that Judah, that is Nachshon's tribe, already precedes me in the marching order, but I should be able to make my offering according to my birth order. A little explanatory context. In last week's parasha, we learned how the tribes were encamped around the Mishkan and that the tribe of Yehuda was placed by God in the vanguard. In our Midrash, we see that Reuven has no choice but to accept Yehuda's priority position in that context, but he expects that his status as firstborn among Jacob's sons or tribes will be recognized in the dedication ceremony from the Mishkan. Note that while we might expect the Nasi of Reuven to advocate for his own honor, the Midrash places the complaint in the mouth of Reuven himself. This cannot mean what it says, though, as Reuven, the man, is long dead. Reuven here, then, must be the personification of the tribe, probably in the person of its Nasi, Elitzur ben Shteur. The pride of the entire tribe is carried by its Nasi. But the appeal fails. In the Midrash, Moshe rebukes Reuven, explaining that the order of the offerings is dictated by God no less than the arrangement of the camp. The offerings are made by Yehuda, then Issachar, then Zvulun, and only then firstborn Reuven. So much for pride of place. It goes further, taking a different tack. It's not an unassailable divine decree that puts Issachar before Reuven. Rather, Issachar demonstrates a piety that Reuven did not. He earns his place near the front of the line. How? We learn in the Midrash that it is Issachar's Nasi who has the idea to organize all of the other Nasiim to offer a group gift in the first place. He prompts them to give. In the first verses of our chapter, the Nasiim give gifts collectively before they bring offerings on behalf of their respective tribes. The, quote, absolutely equal status of the respective tribes and their Nasiim in this inauguration ceremony only barely contains the resentments and rivalries among them behind the scenes. Over what did the Nasiim contend? Is it their honor? God's honor? The honor of honoring God? Yes. Our passage calls to mind the disaster of Cain v'Hevel in Genesis 4. No one told Cain to make an offering to God. He did so spontaneously out of love and gratitude. Hevel was inspired by Cain. Did he intend to one-up his brother with a more lavish offering? Cain thought so. Troublingly, God favored Hevel's offering over Cain's. For Cain, the demotion and rejection were intolerable. Honoring God in the Torah, often through material gifts, in our experience often through prayer, is a high-stakes matter. Earlier in Midrash Rabbah, at 13:6, we learn in a gorgeous passage that God's existential loneliness spurred God to create the world, and that, since creation, God craved intimacy with humanity, a craving fully answered only with the establishment of the Mishkan. The procession of gifts from the Nasi'im is like the procession of the bridal party at a wedding, weighted with love and longing. Those who perceive God's yearning love, of course, want to reciprocate and proclaim their love for the world to see. That urge to proclaim can sometimes yield preening displays and, other times, motivate ugliness, even violence. Rising above the quibbling heard in the Midrash, Numbers 7 portrays a community of individuals united in their love for God, generously claiming no monopoly on it, and humble in disregarding human hierarchies as they stand equally before God.